Welcome to the good, the bad, and the ugly of self-storage, your go-to podcast for mastering the self-storage industry. Join host Michael Cunningham and his son Dylan Cunningham as they share insider knowledge, firsthand experiences, and practical advice. Each episode, they dive into real stories from lucrative deals and strategic renovations to the challenges and pitfalls that await. Whether you're a seasoned operator or new to the industry, learn how to succeed, avoid common traps, and seize great opportunities. Tune in to hear their journey, lessons learned, and secrets to making your storage facility a success. Unlock the potential of self-storage with us.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to the good, the bad, and the ugly of self-storage. I'm Dylan Cunningham, and today we'll be diving into one of the most exciting phases of a self-storage development, erecting the buildings. We spent the last few episodes covering land prep, underground utilities, and grading. Now it's time to go vertical. With me, as always, is my dad, Mike Cunningham. So Dad, tell us how it feels when the steel finally arrives on site.
Yeah, it's a huge milestone. When the steel arrives, you're finally starting to see the project take shape. But it can feel overwhelming. If you're not prepared, organizing, assembling everything correctly is the key to a smooth build. But before we get started, as always, our podcast is for entertainment purposes and intended as a springboard for anyone interested in self-storage or potentially considering building their own self-storage facility. Always consult with professionals that specialize in this type of work before you invest.
All right, so let's start with the basics. How does the material arrive and how do you organize it?
Yeah, well, let's start with a shout out to Cornerstone. Cornerstone is the company that we purchased this facility, all the built metal buildings from. They are an affiliate of MBCI, and so far, just right on point. Everything they've said has been right on point. When the buildings were going to arrive, how everything's been packaged and labeled, very efficient. And at this point, we are extremely happy, and we'll keep you posted as the project moves along. But from this point, just solid company, highly recommend Cornerstone, affiliate of MBCI.
Shout out to Cornerstone.
But anyway, the steel typically arrives on flatbed trucks in pre-bundled sections. So the wall panels, roofing, purling, studs, girders, all the hardware, everything is packaged and labeled specifically for that specific building. And everything's got a code on it, and everything has a measurement on it as well. So even if the code wears off, you could still go back and resource based on the measurement of that particular item. So I think it's a really, really solid, efficient system that they've put in place. So everything's here. Who's responsible? I think this is just kind of a basic question, but who's responsible to unload these flatbeds, and how much time should be planned for something like this? It sounds like a stupid question.
No, it's not, honestly. And that's on you. It's definitely your responsibility, which, you know, maybe not everyone knows that. I mean, all this material shows up and you're kind of just sitting there, but it's on you for sure. So, you know, we recommend definitely needing a forklift or ideally a reach lift to unload all this material, with at least another guy helping you out as well, and kind of a detailed plan. The key is placing everything where it will be needed to avoid moving things twice. You know, you don't want to just unload everything at the nearest spot. You kind of want to plan it out and see, okay, this is for building X and this is for building Y. You're going to want to place those materials close to building, to the respective buildings, or else, you know, you're just going to be wasting time in the future moving all these materials twice. So organizing materials in the order that will be used definitely saves a ton of time.
Yeah, I think that's a key question or answer. I mean, the efficiency of having the materials close by. Obviously, everything's heavy, and it's not easy to move. And you definitely don't want to move it twice. You don't want to handle any of this stuff more times than you need to. And so really having a detailed plan of where everything goes is crucial. And don't put it on the pads, because you're going to build on the pads.
Right, exactly.
And so it's just, and then you don't want it too close to the pads, because you still need to get your equipment around the pads. So it definitely some thought process goes into this. And this is an area I feel we had a little learning curve on, and that's why we're spending a little time on it. But we've seen this on other projects where it just seems like it's just a mess. So we're spending a little time on this because I think it's really important that everybody realizes the importance of making sure that you've got a really laid out plan on where all these materials are going to go, because there's a lot of them.
Exactly. And, you know, if you're struggling every day to find these materials, that's just going to delay your progress even more. So
perfect. All right. So, all right, now we got the materials on site. What do you think's the best way to erect these buildings?
Yeah, so we like to work in phases, you know, starting with the vertical framing, you know, then the first row of interior wall sheeting, then I guess would be the perimeter struts and purlins. So this, you know, this gives us a plumb and square structure before installing the wall paneling. So once that's done, we install the roof. If we're insulating the roof, we lay that down as we install it. And then, you know, after the roof is in, we move on to gutters and fascia.
Yeah, it's pretty simplistic. I mean, self-storage, that's the beauty of this business, that these buildings are, you know, basic metal structures. But obviously with anything, there's a proper way of erecting, and there's a process that is going to create the most efficiency. And I, just how you described it is perfect. You want to get all the studs up, and then you want to get that, you know, that first row, if you will, of the sheeting material on the in-between walls to kind of keep everything straight and vertical while you're putting your purlings on.
Exactly.
And, yeah, and that really just makes the biggest difference.
Right, because, you know, if you start putting the roof on and, you know, your building is not square, you're going to have some problems and some headaches to come.
So I know we've created some efficiencies along the way, and you've been leading the team on the ground. What is your advice on how many teams? So just for the listeners' knowledge, this particular project was almost 80,000 square feet. It's like 77,400, something like that. Talk about your crew, how many guys are out there, what's been the most efficient way of doing this?
Yeah, so we're running three teams of two. Two teams are just focused on the structure, and then that third team is solely dedicated to insulation, roofing, gutters, and fascia. I think it's super beneficial and time effective to be working in a pair, because, you know, this material can, you know, be up to 22 feet long, and it gets heavy. So, you know, when you're putting the purlings on, that's not a one-man job at all. And we also have a picker, and this is a super crucial role. We did not have this when we first started the project, but, you know, we hired someone who basically their job is to keep the materials laid out, and basically he's cleaning up the site and making sure everyone stays productive. This person saves the three teams a lot of time, because if we were just, you know, we had to stop and go get the material every time, you know, we started a new part of the process, you know, these buildings would take a lot longer to build, that's for sure.
So he's a key player in the efficiency.
For
absolutely.
Sure, yeah.
Absolutely.
With any project, there's definitely a learning curve. It probably took us about 2 weeks, maybe 2.5 to 3 to get that first building up. And now it seems like we're putting together a building in about a week or so. And that's without it being fully finished. We're kind of saving most of the interior work to be done, you know, saving it for a rainy day or something. But with all that...
So let's back that up a little bit. So you're saving some of the work. I know we're building this right through winter. It's been a dry winter here, but we are saving a lot of the interior work. And when you say interior work, what can you elaborate that on that a little bit?
Yeah, so that's pretty much just the rest of the wall paneling. We do probably just one layer of the wall paneling just to kind of keep the actual foundation square and make sure it's plumb before the roofing guys start. So I would say the rest of the wall paneling we'll save for a rainy day, the roll-up doors, and then the division walls as well. But, you know, countering all of that into the equation, I would say 2 weeks for a building.
And what size are these buildings?
Yeah, so these buildings range from about 4,200 to 5,000 square feet. Yeah. And I think it was pretty crucial that we stayed under that 5,000 feet square feet. And you can kind of touch a little bit about that. Why did we have to stay under that 5,000 square feet?
Yeah, so one of the fire codes in the county that we're working in stipulated that if the buildings were under 5,000 square feet, we did not have to sprinkler each building. We obviously had to put fire hydrants on the property, and we talked about that in a prior episode. Fire hydrants need to be spaced 300 feet from each other. So I think on this project, we've got four fire hydrants. Yeah, the avoidance was to incur the costs of a full sprinkler facility. So we opted for the 5,000 square feet. But the caveat there is that they required us to put two-hour firewalls on any of the buildings that are kind of abutting or near each other or joining. If they're across a drive aisle, it doesn't matter. There's roll-up doors on both sides. But the buildings that are parallel and abutted, they have to have firewalls. And they're two-hour firewalls, which indicates a double layer of 5/8 rock on both sides of the wall. So it's four layers of drywall, 5/8 drywall. It's a lot of drywall. And the buildings that we have that are adjacent to the vacant lot that, you know, is zoned multi-residential, they made us firewall that entire side. So we, you know, at the end, if I was going to value cost this out, I don't necessarily know. I still believe that the sprinklers would be more expensive, but at the end, it's a sprinkler facility. So I think we would have incurred that cost to instead of taking this route in the future. But anyway, I know what you're saying. We're saving some interior work, the roll-up doors, these firewalls, all kind of for the rainy days that are ahead of us. And so we're doing our best to get these buildings up, getting a roof on them during the good times in terms of good weather, so that we're keeping everybody busy throughout the winter, whether it's raining or not. Correct?
Exactly. Yeah, so I feel like we've covered that. I wanted to move on to roofing and insulation. So what type of roof are we using, and why are we using that roof?
Yeah, so they offer a couple different roof styles for self-storage. There's a screw-down roof, which it's almost similar to like the siding that's on the buildings. It laps itself, and it uses Tex fasteners with a washer on it. And we have those on a lot of our buildings, and we've used it and had okay success. But we decided on this particular project to use a standing seam roof. Less fasteners in terms of that are exposed. There's a lot of fasteners that go underneath to be able to create this roofing. So there's a little bit more labor involved, but there's less exposed fasteners at the end. And a little better warranty, and so we believe it in terms of longevity. It's definitely the way to go, and again, a little bit of a learning curve on all this stuff, but you know, so far so good.
Gotcha. Are we insulating the buildings, and if so, how is that installed?
Yeah, so we're insulating roofs only, not the walls, and that's pretty common with self-storage. Helps for multiple reasons. The region that we're in the Central Valley, we get the triple-digit temperatures for a couple months. And you know, it doesn't drop below freezing or anything too often, but and the insulation that they're putting, the R factor is pretty low. It really helps with condensation. These metal buildings have a tendency to build a lot of condensation, and it helps with that. And there is a small R factor, so it does help. And so we're using the roofing insulation. There's some different backings on this insulation that can be applied. We use just the you know, the white. It's like a urethane white backing on it, and seems to work fine for us, but I know they have some foil back ones that help with the heat generation as well. And so these are all just, you know, things in the early stages of development, and you're kind of going over like what your options are. I think you really need to determine like the climate that you're in. Most cities and municipalities aren't requiring that you're doing any insulation on these buildings. This is going to be a preference on your behalf. It's obviously an additional expense, but it's really going to make the experience for the tenant, I think, much more pleasurable with insulation. So just a FYI.
Agreed.
So, you know, going through this process, how do you make sure that the buildings are laid out properly? I mean, that seems like that could be a headache.
No, totally. And this is kind of step one of the process. You know, we first use string lines and a 250-foot measuring tape just to make sure all the measurements are correct as stated on the plans. You know, if they're a little off, you can maybe cheat the last row or section of units, but just make sure you're starting at the same end each time to assure that the building ends up being square. We usually start at the end with the firewall. And on the plans, the pads are actually 3 inches longer and wider to account for firewalls, finishing metals, and other factors. So we inevitably burn an inch and a half, and then we just start marking every 10 feet vertically. And these measurements will definitely depend on you know, what size units you have. Since all the units we have are 10 feet wide, that's why we're marking every 10 feet. And then the same thing horizontally. So again, burn that inch and a half, and we're marking, you know, every 5 feet. So after marking these, we'll take a string line with one person at each end, and we'll tighten it. And while that's going on, a third person will mark about every 20 to 30 feet with a pencil mark. Now, the reason we do this is because if we just used a large chalk line to snap these lines, you know, it's probably going to be inaccurate with the building sizes
that we're using.
So, you know, marking these lines with a pencil and then taking your smaller chalk line and just kind of going over, like I said, every 20 to 30 feet is definitely a more accurate way of chalking these pads out.
So you got the pads chalked out for all your walls and your dividing lines, and now you're gonna start to put down all your anchor plates for all your vertical deal. How are you anchoring these plates, and what are you using? What's the method there?
Yeah, so each building is engineered to use 1/2 inch by 5 inch anchor bolts on the perimeter, and 1/2 inch by 3 3/4 inch on the interior. These are pretty easy to install, but definitely, you know, there's a learning curve as well. So we lay out the brackets with the bolts, washers, and nuts, and basically you're going to lay out a bracket each cross section that you'll see with the chalk line. So basically every time you see a chalk line meet, that's where you're going to put a bracket there, and it gets 2 bolts. Along with the brackets, we're also laying out the shoes as well. The shoes are kind of just like a metal plate that the door jams are going to end up sitting on, pretty much. For larger spans and for taller buildings, you might need cast-in-place or epoxy anchors, depending on the engineering requirements, but that's basically the gist of it.
Yeah, and you know, again, typically on these single-story buildings, most of the time it's, you know, just a standard anchor bolt. You're not going to have to use epoxy or cast in place. Sometimes, if you're getting, you're going vertical or you're going for larger spans, other than the standard 8-foot doors, then you might have to get into cast in place. But yeah, perfect. So, is there any special equipment that you're using for erection?
Yeah. So, first, for just drilling into the concrete, we're using a combination of rotary hammer drill sizes. For the perimeter of the concrete, those are the larger bolts. We found it most effective to use a 2-inch hammer drill, which has about 20 joules of impact. And then for the inside, we're using a 1-inch hammer drill, which has about 1.8 to 2.1 joules of impact, depending on the make. Some other equipment we're using for just the entire erection of the building are boom lifts, scissor lifts, forklifts, you know, sometimes small cranes for the large beams. But I would say, you know, the right equipment makes everything safer and more efficient.
Yeah, I would say that the pieces of equipment I see you guys using every day, obviously the boom and the scissor lifts are just in constant motion. And, you know, a crucial to a job like this to really keep things safe, number one, keep everybody healthy, they're not using their back, and making things super efficient. So, yeah, absolutely need that type of equipment on a job site of this size.
Exactly. And, you know, just for time efficiency, you know, you just don't want to be, you know, climbing up your ladder, you know, moving it down 2 feet, climbing up your ladder, climbing back down, moving it down 2 feet. I mean, yeah. It wears you down.
So I know we're trying to take this like step by step. We, you know, got the material to the site. We, you know, laid out the pads. We've now put all the anchors down for all the attachments. We've actually kind of backtracked a little bit, but we've got the building up. We're on to like doors, gutters. Let's start with the roll-up doors. Is there an easiest way to install these roll-up doors that you've experienced?
Yeah, so we're currently using TrackRite doors, so shout out to TrackRite. You know, but we've also worked with Janus International, shout out to them as well. Both install fairly similarly, but basically you just attach the tracks to the rolled-up door on the ground. And once you do this on the ground, you'll basically have two guys lift and fasten it to the door jamb. So this whole process probably takes like 20 to 25 minutes per door. I mean, once you start getting really good, I could maybe see you knocking it out in 15 minutes, but it really just depends on, you know, it takes a little to unpackage each, you know, roll up door and all the little nuts and bolts that go with it. But
again, your efficiency comes with the repetitiveness of
correct,
this. And
correct,
so
yeah.
You're saying that with a little bit of practice, after a couple of doors, you're getting it down to about 20 to 25 minutes a door
yep.
installed.
Yep, and we're kind of saving that for a rainy day as well. But yeah, like you said before, I mean, it's kind of been a dry winter, so I could definitely see us, you know, maybe even this getting to this summer where we're going to get really good at putting up a whole bunch of roll-up doors.
Awesome. All right.
Yeah. So let's keep moving on. I guess we can move into gutters now. Do all of the buildings have gutters?
All of our buildings have gutters, and in most cases, you're going to want to put gutters on your buildings. Again, it's you know, making the experience for the tenant as pleasurable as possible. Without a gutter, the water's just going to be coming down right over the top of his door. That makes no sense. So. All the eaves have gutters, and all the downspouts are, you know, leading to the drive aisles, which are all sloped towards the DI. You know, big deal. Just trying to move water away from these buildings the whole time. Obviously, proper drainage prevents, you know, any standing water. We talked about that in the units, and you know, in our opinion, is paramount to having a long-lasting facility and a great experience for the tenant. So I think, you know, at the end, self-storage as a whole for single story, a traditional self-storage buildings, this is a pretty easy build. The building erection part of it is a pretty simple process. And here we're building a 70,000 plus square foot facility. I would say seven guys on the ground. We got three teams of two and a picker. Mm-hmm. And that seems really, really efficient. You know, can you increase the crew size to build the productivity? You absolutely can. But I think that we're at a nice pace, putting up a building a week, roughly.
I would agree.
And then when you add in all the finishes and everything, you know, you're maybe 2 weeks a building. That's about 2 weeks for every 5,000 square feet. I think that's pretty efficient.
Definitely. And you know the saying, I mean, too many cooks in a kitchen, it's not going to get you where you want to be. So I feel like with the crew we got right now, like you said, seven guys is kind of the sweet spot in how we're able to be so efficient and kind of reach our goal.
So with that being said, I know your boots on the ground. What's been the biggest challenge in putting these buildings up, Dylan?
You know, that's a good question. I think weather is always a factor. High winds, you know, during this winter definitely make roofing dangerous and challenging. So, you know, we plan interior work for days, for, you know, ugly days like that. And the wall sheeting and the roll-up doors, like I said, for these rainy days and windy days to keep the crew working, you know. It sucks when it's an ugly, rainy, windy day, but at least, you know, it still feels like we're getting a lot done and we're making progress. And man, is it rewarding to see those roll-up doors go up. I mean,
that's a really, finishing touch. I agree.
It really feels like, you know, you're that much closer to being able to rent that unit out almost. So, yeah, you know, weather's always probably going to be the biggest challenge when dealing with developing.
Well, we've dealt with it all here too. I mean, those triple digits for weeks on end, pouring concrete, to the high winds in the wintertime, mm-hmm. Doing the roofing. Yeah, we've had our share of challenges. And again, we're in, you know, Northern California. It's pretty mild as a whole. I know there's other parts of the country or region that much more extreme conditions than we're dealing with. So, you know, proper planning obviously is key to any of this stuff. So yeah, great insight. Thanks, Dill.
Yeah, of course. You know, I always like to ask for any good, bad, or ugly stories worth sharing. But yeah, just wanted to see if you had any, you know, crazy stories that were worth mentioning.
Yeah, on this project, I would say that on the roofing, we had one of the new guys helping out installing the inside closures for the standing seam roof, and he got off by the tiniest amount. But what happens is, since these buildings are so long, 140 feet, 200 feet long, you get off a small fraction and it starts to compound over the length of the roof. And in this case, with the standing seam roof, it has to be right on the money. And so we found out, I don't know, what was like 75 feet in, that it was what was wrong, and we ended up having to remove all of that roofing material and start over. It probably cost us, you know, a day and a half to 2 days of extra work. But, you know, these are the pitfalls of construction. It does not always go smooth. Right. There is an ugly element or bad element to construction. It's just the process. And so the goal is to try to minimize these hiccups, if you will. And really, it's being on top of your project, every little aspect of it. It's a full-time project or a full-time job, just being on top of all the little nuances of the project. And so super, super important to not just kind of set and go and just expect it to be perfect. Things are going to go wrong. It's just part of the process.
Right. I completely agree. All right. We covered a lot today, from organizing materials to anchoring buildings and installing roll-up doors. I love to ask, what's one final tip for first-time self-storage developers?
Yeah, just like I said, if you're doing this for the first time, expect a learning curve. You know, but you're going to get faster and more efficient after the first few buildings. If you're hiring a crew, make sure you have or they have self-storage experience. It'll save you time and money. I mean, there's always a benefit to hiring the professional that's done something over and over or worked with a particular building manufacturer. All these metal buildings are not built the same. They have a lot of the same characteristics, but they're not all built the same. So if you've got somebody that, you know, that's their specialty, they've, you know, worked with this particular building manufacturer or something very close to it, I mean, they're going to have it down, and their speed is going to be, I'm assuming, going to be padded into their estimate. So I think that's an important question to ask when, if you're not going to do this in-house, you're going to actually go out there and hire somebody to erect your buildings for you, that, you know, they've got experience with this particular building manufacturer, or at least the metal buildings as a whole.
Right. And, you know, that kind of just popped another thing into my head. Some of these buildings have a little lip in them. They're not just straight squares or rectangles. Would you, you know, recommend, and I know we're doing that to, you know, maximize storage space, but would you recommend doing that again? Because I know, you know, it's so much easier when it's just a straight box or rectangle. Yeah. But with the lip, there's all these different, you know, materials that you end up using or you need extra of. And, you know, it kind of slows things down a little bit, in my opinion. So, yeah, I wanted to hear from you if you would do that again or if you think it's not worth it.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. You know, simplicity obviously is kind of the key to super efficiency. Mm-hmm. And if the building is just a perfect rectangle, then all the stud sizes for each row are all the exact same. And you really kind of dummy-proof the entire process, for lack of better words. And the minute you add any detail to a building, and what you're alluding to is the building having a notch in it where it's not a perfect rectangle, mm-hmm. That really does slow the process down. Not a huge high level, but those studs end up being different sizes, and right. There's different materials that go into that aspect of it. And in our experience, it does slow the process down. It's a nice architectural detail, and I think it makes the property look good.
Definitely.
And it's really effective in trying to maximize the square footage. This particular lot was not a perfect square or a rectangle. It's a really odd-shaped property,
right.
And so we're trying to maximize square footage on it. So I think those are factors that need to be looked into for sure to see if it makes sense. But your point is well taken. The simpler the building design is, the more efficient you will get building these things at a really fast clip. And so the minute you start adding any detail or nuances to it, it does seem to slow the crew down. So I think that was a good point to bring up.
Oh, that's a great answer. And with that being said, I think that's it for episode 6 of The Good,
The Bad,
and The Ugly of Self-Storage. Next time, we'll dive into fencing, gates, and security, protecting your facility from day one. One last thing, if you write us a review on the platform you listen from and send it to us at info@selfstoragebrokeragegroup.com, we will send you our must-have, the 50 money-saving questions to ask the professionals if you're thinking about building a self-storage facility. Thanks again for tuning in, and don't forget to like and subscribe.
Thanks for tuning in to The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly of Self-Storage. We hope you found today's episode valuable. If you enjoyed the podcast, please like us, leave a review, and share it with others. For more tips and updates, follow us on Facebook and Instagram. You can also listen to us on your favorite podcast app. Until next time, let's unlock the potential of self-storage together.